if you're loving someone, you know it's right.
Ooh, that's good. That's a good quote. I'm going to put it on a t-shirt. Hi, folks, and welcome to Pastor's Kid, a podcast that explores life, faith, and relationships through the eyes of those who grew up in, out, and through the heart of contemporary religious life. I'm your host, Piper Ramsey Sumner. Today, I'm joined by Jackie Wells. Jackie is a pastor's kid from Central Ohio. When she was in third grade, her father became a pastor, and seemingly overnight, she became a pastor's kid. Jackie and Dan now lead a ministry in the rural Appalachian region of Southeast Ohio. She also has two adventurous and rambunctious boys, Thomas and Lincoln. In addition to her involvement in ministry, Jackie owns and operates a successful custom cake business, Really Good Cakes, in Dresden, Ohio. Welcome, Jackie. Thanks for being here with me.
Thank you.
I'm so excited that we get to talk because the way that we met was that you were living here in Florida with me when I moved here. And so we got to know each other really well and hang out. And Dan was our pastor while he was here. And then you guys moved all the way to Ohio.
Yeah, we did. We loved it in Florida, and we were really sad to leave, but we love it here in Dresden, and we've made a lot of great friends, and we've been blessed with our ministry.
Yeah. And you get to be back close to your family, right? Both of your families are there.
Yes. Both my parents and Dan's parents live in Ohio, in the Columbus area.
Mm-hmm. That's a perk. That's a perk for sure. Kids by their grandparents and all that stuff. That's nice.
Yes, they absolutely love it.
Good. Well, I covered it a little bit in your intro, but first question, the most important question, what makes you a pastor's kid?
Well, when I was in kindergarten, we moved to Columbus. I was born in Cincinnati. And so I remember moving to Columbus and watching my dad drop his job and my mom work extra hard to support the family so that he could go through seminary. It was not easy for him. He struggled getting through it and passing some of the tests, but he did it. He worked really hard and was able to get through seminary and then ordained when I was in third grade. And so that's when I kind of became a pastor's kid. He was actually appointed to the church that we were already going to. Somehow that worked out where the pastor was leaving and he was getting ordained at the same time. And so so the district just kind of put him in that same church in that position since the church people already knew him.
Is he still a pastor now?
Yes. Yes. He pastors a 2-point charge in London, Ohio. And so he pastors two different churches over there and seems to like it.
Yeah, that's cool. 2-point charges. So not every denomination does that, but that's when you have more than one church that you pastor, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So on Sunday mornings, he goes to one church at 9 a.m. And I mean, I'm sure he's probably there earlier for Sunday school and stuff. But at 9 a.m. is the service time at one of his churches. And then he quickly leaves there, juts across town, and is at his other church by 11 for the service there.
Yeah. And United Methodist, right?
Yes, United Methodist. Yeah. Mm.
It's funny. I feel like I maybe had a similar experience I remember when my dad graduated, he got his Master of Ministry degree. And so I remember his graduation and like we took a photo and everything. And so we have that memory. But I was at that age, I was like maybe 3 or 4. And so my memory is just, why is dad wearing a dress? Cause he was in his robes. It's like, what's that weird hat on dad's head? You know? So I don't remember as much of him, like all the work that he put into it. But I do remember when he was like an intern at a church and stuff, just like barely remember.
Yeah, I remember specifically, I remember him studying his Hebrew on the couch for many hours.
Oh, yeah, I bet. So I wonder for you, your experience, because you became a pastor's kid when you were in elementary school. Was that kind of, did it feel like a burden to be the pastor's kid, or was it a badge of honor?
I think kind of both. I really liked being a good influence for others. That's what, like, I think I viewed my job as a pastor's kid to be. So I liked doing that, but I did feel a lot of pressure to be what I felt like my parents wanted me to be or what others in the church wanted me to be. My parents both had a lot of pressure, I think, on themselves to be what they thought a pastor's family should be. And it kind of trickled down into, you know, how us kids, me and my, I have three siblings, kind of acted in how we felt as well, I believe. So.
Yeah. I feel like that's a very unique thing about pastor's kid, is that your parents' job, you kind of get wrapped up in it because you're also in those spaces. So you're there, usually the pastor's family's there at church and at different events. And so you kind of all eyes on you. And the way that you act is, some people interpret the way that the kids act as a reflection on the adult, you know?
Yes, so absolutely.
Like, oh, maybe you're not that great of a Christian, or maybe you're not that spiritual because your kid was being sassy or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Such a funny like correlation. I wonder too, like, I know that you don't use social media a lot, but I wonder if it's like worse now for pastors' kids because of the way that social media is just like, you have people like always kind of looking at each other and kind of like, there's like a lack of privacy nowadays with the way that we all just publicly put our lives out there. And so I feel like it's probably worse for some pastors' kids.
I would assume large users of social media, that would be at the very least different, a different type of pressure put on them.
Mm-hmm.
As well as added on to what they already have. Because you can put so much of yourself out there and so many people can make judgments on whatever you put online rather mm-hmm. than actually getting to know you. So I get that.
Yeah, for sure. What kind of the pastor kid stereotypes? Do you remember hearing those growing up? Were you ever like the rebellious pastor's kid?
Yeah, I heard that one a lot. Oh, watch out for the pastor's kids. There was the rebellious ones. Yeah, mm-hmm. No. I heard a lot of people make jokes about that, but I was rather involved as a kid. I did a lot. Whatever I could be involved in the church, I did. And so a lot of people knew me. So I think, you know, people would make that joke, but they knew me for who I was already and kind of were like, yeah, that's not you. So yeah. They just joke about it. But that's really the only one that I ever heard.
Yeah. What about you never heard about the like kind of goody two shoes, super sheltered pastor's kid?
I don't think I heard very many people make comments about that, but I have like, at least not comments to me about it, but I have heard people say that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know though, if it was something I heard from a person that I knew or if it was something from like media, you know, like movies and stuff. I'm not sure where that came from.
Mm-hmm. Seventh Heaven.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that stereotype was something that came from actuality, like actual life, or if it came from something in media.
Yeah. I can't believe, I don't think I've talked about Seventh Heaven on this podcast yet, but it's like that was like a pastor's family and that was part of it, right? It was like, oh he's the pastor and everyone's keeping tabs on their kids or whatever. That's funny.
Yeah. And I would say that the idea of keeping tabs on the kids is pretty similar to what the way I grew up. Lots of and I don't know that I remember feeling that so much from the people of the congregation as much as hearing it from my mom that they would hear it from them. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. I remember specifically having my mom say one time, no, you can't wear pants to church. When I got older, we were allowed to wear pants to church. Yeah. But when I was younger, she would say, no, you can't wear pants to church because people are watching. And she'd always say like, well, people are watching you. People are watching you. And she'd say like, well, we're going to hear it if this happens, or we'll hear it mm-hmm. from this person if something that they didn't approve of happens. And so I don't know that I heard it or felt like, I don't know if my parents didn't say that to me, that I would feel as watched.
Right.
I feel like my parents kind of made me feel that way more than the congregation.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was like secondhand kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like straight from the person, but through your mom.
Yeah.
I wonder too, like how much of maybe her own kind of insecurity and worry, you know, that she was reading into situations too, you know, she was like,
oh, absolutely. I think she, I think she just wanted to be there for my dad, and she wanted him to be looked at, as like a reliable pastor. And, you know, she, I don't know from what in her life that made her feel like the pastor's family had to be so different than other families. But that's what it felt like to me. Like she felt like our family then had to be different than we were before he was a pastor.
Right.
And so she tried to make those changes.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Now you have to dress up. I remember that too, that rule. You had to wear a dress, and then eventually I could wear like slacks.
Yes.
And stuff like that.
But never jeans. I was never allowed to have jeans on in church on Sunday morning. I could wear it like to some sort of other thing, but.
Youth events and stuff, of course.
Yes.
Yes. Same rules for me. Like, I had to wear, like, dress pants. That's so funny. And I was a tomboy, so I hated wearing dresses.
Yeah, I went through a phase of tomboyishness, and I didn't like it either.
Yeah.
But I also had a really terrible haircut that kind of made me look like a boy.
Oh.
So I started wearing dresses more often.
Like, nobody's going to make that mistake again.
Yes.
That's funny. So tell me about your dad. What kind of pastor is he? I use the kind of comparison prophetic versus pastoral. What was his vibe?
So my dad's been in a lot of different situations as a pastor. He started out as a youth pastor, and then he was an associate pastor under three different senior pastors. And then he became a senior pastor himself. And so he's gone through all of these different phases. And I think over the years, he's gotten more comfortable with all of the duties as pastor. But he's an introvert. So the pastoral care side of the job is far more comfortable for him than the other aspects of being a pastor, the preaching part, the teaching part, all of that stuff is not as comfortable for him, although he's gotten more comfortable over the years. It's taken a little bit more from him.
Yeah, I could see that. You don't want to ruffle feathers, and it's hard when like all eyes are on you and that kind of thing. I think introverts and I think pastoral care, those are like, that makes for a really great pastor, you know?
Oh yeah. He's one, his pastoral care is top notch. He's, he's great. You know, if you're, in need of somebody to come and visit you when you're sick, or just someone to listen to you. Like, he's amazing at that. Mm-hmm. And not to say that he's not a good preacher or anything. It's just not, doesn't come as easily for him.
Right. Yeah. That's cool. So more, more on the pastoral shepherding kind of side.
Absolutely.
That's cool. Okay. A fun question. Can you think of any like pastor's kid perks that you remember having? Like, the one I always think of is getting to like drink the juice after communion.
That's what my kids love. That's their favorite.
Yeah.
They get to go get the juice and the bread. And I did do that as a kid. I don't remember like it being very important to me. I just did it.
Yeah. You're like, all right.
Sure.
Yeah. Bring home.
So you don't have to throw it in the grass. I'll eat it. I don't know. I don't know that I had I'm sure I did, and I just didn't recognize them as perks probably.
Right, yeah. Did you ever live in a parsonage?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I lived – most of the time I did not. I did live in a parsonage for about a year and a half or so. When I was living at home. Now, as an adult, I've lived in only parsonages. But when I was a teenager, I was a freshman in high school when we lived in a parsonage. And I do remember that being a little bit tension filled too, slightly, because my parents didn't feel like they could do anything with the house without permission.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't paint a wall without permission. They couldn't fix a disposal without permission. Like, yeah. Rather than just being able to just take care of it.
Yeah. I remember that too. My big sister, she was in like sixth grade. We lived in a parsonage for a couple years. And my sister wanted to paint her room blue. And mom was like, well, we have to talk to the board. The next time we have a board meeting, we'll ask and we'd ask permission. Of course they said yes, you know. But yeah, I remember that too. Like you have to kind of ask permission. But then if we ever needed anything, like if, you know, if we needed something like a kitchen supply, you know, like, or I don't know, extra, whatever, we could just run over to the church and get something out of the church kitchen.
Now that's a perk as an adult for sure.
I bet. Yeah.
Being able to use the ovens if need be, or, mm-hmm. We've used the freezer. Our freezer is broken down twice since we've lived here in Ohio. And, it was during COVID, so it wasn't like you could just go get a freezer that day. You had to order it and have it sent to you. And
right.
So we had a empty freezer in the youth building that we would just jam full of our food until the freezer came. So like, that's a huge perk as an adult.
Yes. Yeah. And as a kid, all of the cement on all the church property, so you can ride your bike. Did a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Scooter. Ride my scooter around.
We never lived close enough to the church to like use it other than when we just were there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Doing regular church things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny.
So we talked about this a little bit about feeling that pressure. How did you kind of deal with having to feel like people were judging you or like you had a higher expectation, a higher standard than other kids, especially as a teenager? What was that like?
As a teenager, I think I've always been slightly, more susceptible to being, to like knowing who I am. I never really felt like I just didn't know what I liked or who I was. And so as a teenager, I think I had already kind of come into myself in terms of my faith. And I had already kind of come into myself enough to not care what people thought. And so, you know, as an adult, and being a pastor's wife now, we strive, like, both Dan and I, we strive really strongly. We strive really hard to be genuine with people. Because yeah, I grew up feeling like my family had to be, or felt like they had to be different than who they actually are. And I never felt comfortable with that. I always felt like that was wrong. Like, why should we have to be different? Like, we're just people, right? Why should we have to act differently, or why should people look at us differently just because we have an office in the church building? I never felt comfortable with that idea. And I kind of, as a teenager, was able to figure out on my own that, like, I didn't like it. And I was kind of like, well, you know what? You're going to get what you get. This is who I am. And I am comfortable with who I am. I'm comfortable with the fact that, yes, I love Jesus. And yes, I am here to try to help you and to love you. And if you don't like it, then I don't care. So as an adult, you know, I've tried really hard to just be genuine with everyone that I meet inside and outside of the church. Because I think that the most important the most important role as a follower of Jesus is to love God and love people. And I think that not being genuine gets in the way of that. It makes it so much easier to love God and love people when you accept the blessing of who you are that God gave you. And So luckily, I don't think I had to deal with that too much as a teenager. As a kid, I remember really kind of going back and forth in my head, like, well, I want to please my parents. I want my parents to be proud of me. I want, you know, I want them to feel like I am working hard to make their ministry easier. You know, I tried those things, but I would go back and forth in my head thinking, well, it doesn't feel right because that's not what we would have done if people weren't watching.
I love that. That's some good stuff. Yeah, I think you mentioned, like, I don't know, what I'm kind of hearing is authenticity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you want to be able to just be who you are. And I, you know, growing up as a pastor's kid, I always kind of felt that way as well. It's like, we're just people, you know? But it took me longer, I think, than you to realize, like, and that means that I don't have to strive for perfection. You know, I still very much had that perfectionism in me that I had to look and be, you know, the absolute best Christian I could be. And so I would be really hard on myself. And I was very, very worried about how other people saw me. But I think that's so great that you were able to, as a teenager, which is such an important age too, right? It's like, that's the age that you are figuring out who you are. You're like slowly kind of coming into your own. And so that's the age that you should be able to make mistakes and you should feel free to just be your authentic self, right?
Sure.
Yeah. That's good. And also that makes it for you to be a good pastor spouse, because then you don't get sucked into the perfectionism that other people might try to put on you. So you can, sure, kind of like protect your kids and stuff, which I think is important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As being a mom is hard on its own, but, you know, being a pastor's family slightly is similar to like being a family of where somebody in your family is a celebrity almost. Mm-hmm. Not to say that you're in the limelight all the time or anything, but people know you, whether they're watching you or not, or whether you feel like they're watching you or not, people know you. And, you know, so as a mom of two boys that are never going to, I mean, they're going to make mistakes. They're not going to be perfect. I just really strive to let them know that that's okay. You know, you're allowed to be a kid. You don't have to be this kid that, you know, sits cross-legged and hands crossed in their laps and is silent when they're in the sermon, in the service. At our church, we don't have children's message time where they leave the church. We keep them all in the service with us, and it is loud. It gets loud sometimes, yeah, and that's okay. And my kids are part of that loudness sometimes. I mean, they're a little bit older now, so it's not as bad. But yeah, so I try to allow them to know that as long as they are trying to follow God's word in their life and trying to love people and love him, then that's all that I ask. And that's all that the church should ask of them. And I think as people have kind of gotten to know us because of our authenticity and because of being genuine with people, I think they understand a little bit better. Because they kind of see like, okay, well, you know what? They are just another family. They're just the neighbors down the street. They're, you know, mm-hmm, who have this job. But I mean, honestly, to be a pastor is a job, but it's also a job for everyone, right? So like the idea of loving God and loving others, yeah, that's our job as pastor, but that's also your job.
Right.
Everybody's job. That's everyone's job, is to love God and love people. Mm-hmm. And we're just here to kind of help direct in that respect. Mm-hmm. And so I think as people kind of realize that sometimes we can mess up, we try not to, we just want to love you, that they are a little bit less, they're a little bit more understanding mm-hmm. if there's something that happens that they don't like.
Just modeling that authenticity as well, and to show that you can, I don't know, that like, that faith can look like so many different things, and it's an expressed in so many different ways, but then there's also that simplicity to it, which I think so too. It's like the simplicity of just love God and love other people, and all the other stuff is just extra. It's like fluff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and so then that makes me think, what was it like for you as a kid growing up to talk about faith at home? Did your parents give you space to explore your doubts and your questions? What was that like?
So my husband, he tells me that I grew up in like this evangelical bubble. and I didn't even realize it until I compared my life growing up to his and to some of my other friends. I never felt neglected or out of place growing up. I never felt like I was missing out of anything. But I definitely did grow up missing out on many pop cultural references. Still today, Dan will turn on music in the car and be like, "What's this song?" And I'm like, "I have no clue. I don't know. I didn't listen to that kind of music growing up."
That's the way he uses you to entertain himself.
Yes, he does. And so, yes, we were in this like evangelical bubble, but my parents they gave us the freedom to ask questions. However, they were kind of rigid in their beliefs, and they wanted you to believe exactly as they did, that's normal for a lot of parents, right? Like your kid asks you a question, you answer it. It's an important subject to you. And so you want your kid to understand the answer to be what you understand the answer to be, right? And so I remember leaving movie theaters and spending the entire ride home talking about what ideas were wrong in the movie and why, because the people in the movie didn't live the life that like my family lived. Like we spent lots of time talking about what was wrong about different things and why it was wrong and why a certain dress was wrong because it wasn't modest or whatever it might be. We spent a lot of time talking about those things. And so there was definitely room to question, but not so much room to figure out the answer for myself, I think. There was always an answer. It was never like, there wasn't a guidance for me to find the answer. It was just an answer.
Right.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing all the time, but growing up and trying to figure it out, I think I would have preferred the ability to just maybe have them say, well, here's some stuff I suggest you read,
right.
Or, you know, something like that, rather than just an automatic answer. And that's mm-hmm. just, that's that.
Yes. I feel like I probably had similar stuff of like, well, we believe that kind
yes.
of thing.
Answers yeah.
to questions. Yeah. We, as in you and me, you know, you come
yeah.
with me and you're going to believe what I'm believing.
You're a part of this family. You're going to believe the same thing. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you can question inside the parameters, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt that too growing up. How do you think, so you grew up a kind of maybe more conservative than maybe you are now. So in what ways have you seen your faith evolve and change since you have left home and that you've learned more about yourself and the world and been on your own as an adult?
Well, my faith has evolved as I've spent more time with people outside of my upbringing, I think. I've learned that I was fairly sheltered growing up. As I've gotten to know people more thoroughly, though, I've gotten to know myself on a deeper level as well. And I've become more open-minded. And I feel like I'm more loving than I used to be. I felt as though that I had become too judgmental, I think, because of because of what I said just a minute ago about, you know, is constantly saying what's wrong about other people. And so I think my parents used that, not purposefully trying to get you to think what's wrong, constantly think about what's wrong with other people, but in order to direct you into what is like a good, wholesome way of living. I get that, but I think it kind of backfired for me a little bit, to where I was feeling like I was judging other people too often. And so like, as I've gotten to know people outside of the way that I grew up, on a deeper level, that's given me the ability to love people more thoroughly, because it's taken away some of that automatic instinct to judge somebody else. And once I was out of the house, I tried really hard to understand people more often, understand them more in order to better love them through that.
Who knew that just like meeting people outside of the little bubble that you grew up in could, you know, expand your horizons? Like, I experienced that as well.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, like, and these questions are funny because I was looking at these questions last night and I was thinking about them and praying about them. And it made me think a lot about my decisions as a parent, right? Because we're talking a lot about my upbringing and it's like, okay, am I doing this right for my kids? And so I don't know. Yeah. I guess in a couple years you can ask them.
Yes. Is this podcast is still going in like 10 years or something?
Yeah.
I'll sit down with Thomas and ask him what he thinks.
Yep.
Yeah. But so I talked about that with Josh a couple episodes ago. We talked about how, you know, like our parents were, they work with the tools that they have and that's all that we can do, you know? Yeah. And you raise your kids to be who you you hope them to be, but you have to find that balance between who you hope them to be and who they are. There's this balance between it, right? And sure, they're going to find their own way. And I feel like, I bet a lot of parents, I'm not a parent, but I'm sure lots of parents feel the same way as you. It's like, am I doing right by them? You know, am I doing it?
Yeah.
Am I doing it right? Yeah.
You know, you want to teach them to think for themselves and to come to conclusions on their own, especially the big stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's not always easy because I don't know that very many kids want to do that on their own.
Right.
You know, they want you to tell them an answer mm-hmm. and just have it be that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, I feel like that's probably how I felt as a kid. Like, I was completely fine originally with my parents giving me just an answer and not saying, okay, well, let's figure out how to do this together so that you can come up with an answer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what, you know, they need in order to grow themselves, is to be able to think for themselves and to come to conclusions on those big subjects.
Yeah.
Without my influence.
Yes.
Well, that's not right. I don't want to say without my influence. I want my influence to be there, but I don't want to like stuff it in their face.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's good. And I think maybe also have them, or, you know, they know that whatever path, you know, generally whatever path that they go down that, or actually, yeah, whatever path they go down, their parents are going to love them no matter what.
Yeah, know? Absolutely.
And that's like the ultimate. That's what, if your kid knows that growing up, and when, you know, when they reach adulthood, I think, you know, you've done right by them. So you married a pastor. First, I want to know, did you know that he was going to be a pastor when you started dating him?
No, but there's a funny story behind that.
Oh yeah.
So, when we first started dating, we were high school sweethearts. We were young and in high school.
You met in youth group, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when we first started dating, he was actually planning on going into the military, into the Marines. But one summer, we were at Christian Adventure Camp is what it was called. And he had like just a very large God moment and felt God telling him that he needed to go into some sort of ministry. And he pulled me aside after it was at like a fireside moment that happened. And after that, we were supposed to be going to our cabins to go to bed. Well, obviously, he was like not ready to do that. He wanted to tell me all about it. And so he pulled me aside and we sat on this big like phone pole that had fallen down. And we sat down on this big phone pole and we sat and talked for probably an hour and a half. And we got told by this one counselor multiple times, you need to go to bed, you need to go to bed. And we're like, we just ignored him. But during that time, he told me what happened and then he felt like he was needing to go into ministry. And when he told me that, I had a moment of recognition of a memory from when I was in third grade. I remember, I suddenly remembered out of nowhere a time when I was sitting on the school bus on the way to school. I walked to school in third grade, so it must have been when I was on a school trip or something. But I was in a school bus, and I remember writing in a journal that because I was writing in a journal to try to keep other kids from talking to me. I was very, very shy, and I didn't want other kids to talk to me. So I was writing in this journal, and I remember writing in this journal that I knew that God had told me that I was going to marry a pastor. And that I was going to be a pastor's wife and that I needed to prepare myself for that. And so when he told me that, it was like shocking. And we had already discussed getting married. We knew we were going to get married. We were just waiting until an older age.
Wow.
It was just kind of interesting how that happened, but.
Mm. You were told the future.
Yes. In third grade.
Wow. That's cool. Did you ever find that journal?
No, I never kept my journals. Like, I've never been somebody to keep my journals. I finish them and throw them away. I don't like to keep them. Mm. I don't know why. I just don't. Yeah.
You're like, I don't need those memories. Toss it.
Yeah. Well, I use it more to just like clarify my thoughts. So,
yeah.
Not really for memories, but just to kind of, it's easier for me to organize my thoughts through writing sometimes.
Yeah. That's cool. I could see that. I should do that. I'm an internal processor, but sometimes I will like process something without even realizing it. I'll just like go about life and I'll be like, I've come to this conclusion, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe I'd be faster at it if I wrote things down. It might help me.
Maybe. It makes you slow down. That's what I've noticed.
Slow down. Yeah.
You have to slow down in order to sit down and write it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's good too. You gotta slow down. So you and Dan went to Mount Vernon Nazarene University. And I want to ask you about that because we have that in common that I also went to a Nazarene school. I went to Southern Nazarene University. And so that's like our crossover kind of moment, even though your school was in Ohio and mine was in Oklahoma. So what was that like for you guys? Because I know of being a Nazarene, at least my experience at SNU, it very much felt Nazarene. Everything, you know, you had to take classes about, I don't know, theology, you had to go to chapel. Everything was kind of like draped in the Nazarene identity. So what was it like for you guys as non-Nazarenes? At least you were in the Wesleyan camp being like Methodist, but you were still, did you ever feel like outsiders?
The only time we felt like outsiders, I think Dan felt more like an outsider than I did.
Because he was in the religion department, right?
Yes, because he was in the religion department. And it was always like, well, you're not a Nazarene. So like some of the ideas maybe were pushed aside or thoughts were pushed aside occasionally, specifically in theology classes, not usually by the professor, but by other students a lot of times.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I never felt hugely out of place. I was in the Family and Consumer Sciences department, and there was two main people directing that department, and one of them was a Methodist pastor's wife. So I kind of felt like I had that bond a little bit where, you know, if I struggled, I could go talk to her, and she could be like, yeah, that's weird, you know? Yeah. So I don't feel like I felt hugely out of place very often. But I do know that Dan felt out of place occasionally within his theology classes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see that. I think, I know growing up Nazarene, like that was a big part of my identity. And like specifically, I'm not just like a Christian. I'm like a Nazarene. Like it was a very specific thing.
Oh, I could feel that at the school. Yeah.
Yeah.
The people who were Nazarenes, that was like, I'm a Nazarene.
Mm-hmm. And I think maybe it's because it's like a, in the grand scheme of things, it's like a really new denomination. And actually it's newer, older than the United Methodist Church, because the United Methodist Church was put together in what, like the 50s or something, like officially put together in the 50s or 60s. But Methodism, of course, was around a long time. But so I think maybe because the Church of the Nazarenes only been around a little over 100 years now, and then it's so small, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's just like the identity thing, being specifically Nazarene, is like a big deal. It's like very special kind of thing. And we had, you know, people at my school were like multiple generations. I remember one time in chapel, they were, I think it might have been like the, maybe it was like freshman orientation or something. And they had everybody like stand up if you're a, you know, second generation Nazarene, third generation, fourth. They went all the way like five generations, you know. And that was like, it's like this real special thing that look at this legacy, you know.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think, we felt that a bit more at graduation time. So like, mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of people who didn't understand that, well, why would you want to go into the Methodist church when you have an opportunity to go into the Nazarene church? They didn't understand that we wanted to stay where we were. And Dan's response was always that he felt he loves the United Methodist Church and he wants to better it. And how can you better it if you're not in it? So
true. And how long has Dan been a pastor now?
13 years.
Wow.
Yes.
And so you spent 6 years here in Florida, and then now you're coming on what?
We spent 7 years in Florida.
Seven in Florida.
Mm-hmm. We spent 7 years in Florida, 4 years in Kentucky before that, and then we've been here for two.
What is your church like now that you guys are at? Is there a lot of like... I know last time that we talked about this kind of stuff, you guys had a really cool ministry that you were doing in like a brewery, right? You guys still do that?
Yes. It's called Henry Schutz. So early on when we first got here, Dan was given some church historical documents from somebody who knew that he's a historian. He teaches American religious histories at Duke. And so they knew that, and they thought, well, hey, I've got these documents that you might want to look at. And they gave them to him, and he found a document stating that there was a man named Henry Schutz who attended church at our church, and he had been found, what they said, drinking again. That's all it said. He had been found drinking again. And they stated that he, in front of everyone, they stood in the pulpit in front of the congregation and stated that he was no longer able to be helped.
Wow.
And kicked him out. And so he read this and he thought, you know, the church is going to kick this man out. Where do you think he's going to go? Right back to drinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they kicked him out, and we found his burial ground not even two blocks away from the church. It's just right down the church from the church, in the cemetery down the road. And his tombstone is sitting there. And so we decided that we were going to go into the different spaces where the Henry Schutz might be found in the world. And that we would be able to just show them love through study of different subjects and different matters within the church, without the church, just different ideas, different pushy subject type things. So we meet twice a month, and we go to different breweries, each time. We even have, there's one brewery called, the Woolly Pig Brewery. And this brewery has its own group of people that they only come when we're at Woolly Pig, but they come every time. And it's amazing the relationships that we've made and just the ability to have people from different backgrounds come together. We have a lot of people who come who grew up in very different backgrounds from a lot of the people within our church. And so they have very big, different ideas about just different subjects. And so we're able to talk about it and talk through it. And it's pretty interesting.
I love that. I think that's what church should look like, you know, existing not just, you know, inside your church building, but out
in Absolutely. The
world, you know, hanging out with people and connecting with people and creating space for there's the authenticity again, you know, being authentic and creating space where people can feel comfortable being authentic, you know. And that story is really cool. I love that. So did you have to teach Dan anything about being a pastor when you married him, since you knew more about it as a pastor's kid than him?
Well, I didn't know how to answer that question. So I sent Dan a text message last night and I said, can you answer this question for me? If I did teach you anything, like, I don't know that I taught you anything. And he said, what you've taught me, I think the biggest thing is avoiding the common pastoral tendency to people please, perform, and pretend that the office of pastor somehow requires a pastor and their family to not be your true self. Your family seemed to be constantly covered and restricted by some sort of idealized expectation of how a pastor and family should look, act, and lead. We're no different, no better, no worse than anyone in our church community. We just happen to be the ones that have an office in the church. Just be real, and people cling to that. And so I thought that was interesting that that's what he said, when almost all of my answers thus far to your questions are that. So apparently I clung to that as a teenager when I decided that that's not okay as a pastor's kid, and then moved that into my pastor's wife.
And I could see that, because, you know, being when you guys were nearby and seeing that with him too, you know, just like the freedom, I think, that he had to be his authentic self and not to feel like, you know, he had to be perfect. And I'm glad to know that he learned that from you. That's cool.
I didn't know he learned it from me, but.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Now you know. So how has this, growing up as a pastor's kid, what are some of the ways that you have seen that it's influenced the way that you're raising your own pastor's kid? Well, I usually ask this, maybe I'll combine this with the other question that I like to ask, which is, what advice can you give to pastors who are raising their own PKs right now, since you're doing that?
I mean, I've touched on it a little bit, that I want them to grow up feeling like, they can be open-minded from other people and other situations. I want them to grow up knowing that they can always turn to God in good and bad situations, and that they can always turn to us to help them in guidance as well. In terms of trying to give advice on what to do with your children, just love them. You know, allow their personalities to shine, even in front of the church. You know, don't hold them back because of a fear of what other people might think. Teach them to be genuine and vulnerable. Most of all, teach them to love others and look at every person as his, as God's, and as a brother or sister in Christ. You know, I tell my children every day as they get out of the car to go into school, be good, be kind, and be loving. And I think that is like a very, very simplified way of just telling them to love people, take care of them. And I tell them to be good, be kind, and be loving towards everyone. Sometimes I have to say, including your brother, but they hear that every single day. And that's the way that I try to live my life. I tell myself that every day, be good, be kind, and be loving towards others. And from there, if you're good, kind, and loving towards others, then from there, God can do so many things. And you can just follow him from there and not worry about whether what you're doing is right or wrong. If you're loving someone, you know it's right.
Ooh, that's good. That's a good quote. I'm going to put it on a t-shirt. If you're loving someone, you know it's right. It's cool. I love that. Okay, one of my last questions. If you were able to sit down for a chat with your younger self, with little Jackie, what would you want to tell her?
This question is really difficult for me. I don't know. I think my experiences that I've had have created who I am today. And so I don't know that like I have any thing that I would want to change. However, I might tell myself that I am allowed to be a beautiful example of God's great love while being transparent and genuine in myself.
Any closing thoughts?
I don't have any closing thoughts.
No, you said a lot of good stuff. I think all of this stuff is really wonderful and I think really great. And I can see with like every question that you've answered that, you know, that you genuinely care about people and you care about people being people and not having to live up to some standard that nobody should feel the pressure to live up to. And instilling that in your kids is a beautiful thing. And I think, you know, what more could you ask for from a parent? So,
sure.
Yes. I think you are a PK raising good PKs.
I hope so.
Yes. No, I knew those boys for at least a little bit and they are awesome kids. And I wish I could still see them, you know, growing up and stuff, but they're cool. And do they both have mullets now or is it just Lincoln?
Just Thomas. Lincoln got rid of his while we were in Florida because he felt like he had too much attention.
He's like, I'm too popular.
Yeah, people were giving him too much attention for it, so he was not about that. He's now rocking the flat top.
Oh, yes. So
he's got the flat top, and Thomas has the mullet, which he finally let me cut after 2 years of growing it out.
Oh, my goodness.
He finally let me cut it a little shorter when he started wrestling this year because it was getting real naughty from kids, like, putting their hands on his head.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't like brushing it out. So he let me cut it a little shorter. It's still to his shoulders, but it's a little shorter.
That's awesome. That's proof that they're cool kids. Mullet and the flat top. That's awesome. And then their little wrestling outfits I saw on Facebook. It's so cute.
I know. I wasn't sure what I would think about wrestling, but I have been really enjoying it.
Oh, good. So. I'm glad. Do you guys go to like little tournaments and stuff?
Yes, we have to go to one tomorrow. So They have practice tonight and then they've got a tournament tomorrow and they had one on Monday.
That's cute. I love that. Cool. Well, Jackie, my very last question is where do people go to hear from you? Do you have anything, any social media presence or website or anything so people can keep up with you?
Sure. So I am on Facebook and Instagram. However, I only post stuff that has to do with my custom cake business. So if you want to keep track of that, you can follow that. It's Really Good Cakes, both on Facebook and Instagram. But if you are wanting to kind of keep an eye on what we're doing in our ministry together, we are at dresden.church. That's our website. Or you can find Dresden United Methodist Church on Facebook and YouTube to see what we're up to.
Very cool. Awesome. And I have seen those cakes, and they do look like really good cakes.
I hope so. That's my goal. Make them always taste the best, and then add some fun decorations.
Yes, that's great. I love that. Well, thank you again. This has been really an awesome conversation.
Thanks, you too.
Yes. And thank you to everybody who joined in to listen to this episode of Pastor's Kid. If you are so inclined, rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. And you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and find the podcast anywhere that you listen to podcasts like you are now. Our theme music is Brushmaster by Yure. You can find him on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm your host, Piper Ramsey Sumner. See you next time on Pastor's Kid.